gentlemen, boys and girls, pets and creatures of every make and model, fans of entertainment and shenanigans alike. Welcome back to Legends Podcast. I'm Beef.
I'm Wing.
And I'm Lobster. 30 years ago, Batman swept into movie theaters, ushering in the modern era of comic book movie making. Directed by Tim Burton, starring Jack Nicholson as the Joker, Kim Basinger as Vicki Vale, and Michael Keaton as the man who launched 50,000 letters protesting his casting as Bruce Wayne. Despite a troubled production, which saw a writer's strike, budget overruns, stolen film reels, and intense skepticism of the film's tone and direction, Batman became the biggest movie of the year and the fifth highest grossing film of all time by the end of its run. Batman became one of the biggest movie franchises of the 90s, with another film by Burton and Keaton, two more directed by Joel Schumacher with Val Kilmer and George Clooney taking turns in the bat suit. But 30 years later, after Christopher Nolan's super successful trilogy with Christian Bale, Ben Affleck's less successful turn, and the casting of Robert Pattinson as the Batman in Matt Reeves' upcoming film, does this version still light up our bat signal, or is the joke on us? Gentlemen, 30 years.
That's a long time.
It feels like it. I remember watching this as a kid on VHS.
Yep.
And it's still as dirty and dark and wet and seedy. It's like the worst of worst that New York could have been in the future and in the past. That's what they saw.
Or in 1989.
Yeah, but I mean, they took it to, you know, it's night always. I think there's like 5 day shots in this whole movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It is. It's There's everything
one
I remember.
Sequence,
and,
I think,
and it's slimier too. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah, I immediately put on Batman Returns after I finished this one because the two films, like, you have to take back to back. And for me, I think I was a little young for Batman when it first came out, but the hype for Batman Returns was right there. And like, it was PG-13. I was not 13 yet at the time. And this was a big deal in my house because I really wanted to see Batman Returns. And I don't think I was allowed to because there was a lot of press when it came out that, oh, this is supposed to be a kid's movie. And yet it's so dark and violent. And the Penguin bites a guy's nose off. And
it's only a nose.
It's only nose, yeah. It could be worse. Your nose could be gushing blood. But
oh, my God.
It's
that's
such
a pussy I'm looking for.
But you have to watch these back-to-back because they go out into left field with Joel Schumacher. But there's just, I don't know, it's just so iconic. I know I shared the Honest Trailers trailer with you like 5 minutes before we started, and it's a five-minute video. But that, like, they make the point that, look, this reset the tone from the Batman TV series from the 60s, because what happened in the intervening time is in the comic books, Frank Miller happened, and Batman became dark and gritty, and the comic books were already kind of there, and then Tim Burton was like, well, let's bring that to the big screen. Let's make him dark and brooding and make the city a cesspool, and why you need a vigilante hero like Batman to come out and clean things up. And they carry that tone throughout these two films. And for what it's worth, although Schumacher does try to lighten things up a bit, they stick with the leather and
bat nipples.
Bat nipples, yeah. I mean, they kind of lean into it a little bit. They don't fully reset the tone.
Without the bat nipples, I don't think we'd have Thor nipples in Thor 1 or 2 or whatever.
No, I mean, yeah, I definitely see what they were trying to do, and that's often been kind of lampooned, but it definitely is, it's a thing. I mean, I see what they were going for. They wanted to make it, you know, like they were Greek gods
right
out there, but
yeah, I don't think that was the right impulse at that moment. But
I love that we had to wait until, which Nolan movie was it when Lucius Fox was like, you want to be able to turn your head?
The Dark Knight.
The Dark Knight, yeah. So we have to wait five more movies for him to actually get a neck.
Yeah, that's true. But I don't agree that I have to watch the other one after. I think that Batman Return has a fairy tale kind of vibe that the first one doesn't have. The first one is a gothic, dark, noir movie that's coming from somewhere in Germany in the 1930s.
Both movies are about their villains. Both movies are so firmly, like, this movie is so much more about Jack Nicholson than it is about Michael Keaton, and Batman Returns is so much about Danny DeVito and Michelle Pfeiffer. I mean, for two Batman movies, they're the least Batman character centric of any of the movies, really. Batman Forever.
First four are really based on the villain and not the Batman.
Yeah.
And then you have Batman Begins,
where they actually do base it
brilliant
on
brilliant and in reality.
Yeah, but after that, even the Dark Knight is really about the Joker and Harvey Dent. So, you know,
it is kind of interesting that these two, I think, is and you know, for what it's worth, this one and Batman Returns are regarded as some of the best Batman films, and they're both so heavily about things other than Batman or Bruce Wayne.
Do you remember how big of a touchstone this was, though, at the late 80s, early 90s? I mean, Six Flags Great Americas had, you know, every one of them had a Batman ride, or every fifth one, you know.
This movie, you know, go back and look at the poster. It's just the bat symbol. And that is something that they, I think, keyed into very early on, which they realized they have a logo that they can stamp on absolutely everything. And they do it, and they keep doing it. And it really is successful marketing, to the point where it's one of the most recognized symbols today. And it's the black and yellow bat symbol.
When was the last time that they did that before that?
With Superman, right?
There you go.
So, you know, they do take a page out of that book. But then Jurassic Park comes along after, does the same thing. Other movies attempt to kind of do it where, you know, they're just going to focus the marketing on one specific symbol. And that really sells the movie, the brand, the product, whatever, the merchandise. And, you know, it's cross promotional, where you had the comics at the time, the Batman comics, there's a renewed interest in the animated series, which is so definitive in terms of telling Batman stories and even expanding the rogues gallery beyond the comics. That's where we get Harley Quinn. That's where we get the backstory of Mr. Freeze that later works its way into the movie. So, and of course, you get the Joker, right? The Joker, Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
Sorry, Jack.
I like them all. That's the thing with the Joker, is that every interpretation is kind of good. Even in the comic, they kind of hint that it might be more than one guy at some point, because he's so different all the time. But this version of the Joker and this version of Batman, to be honest, is the most formative movie in my life. I saw that at 80 years old. My mom was like, oh, shit, why did I bring my kids see that? I saw that in theater. Yeah. So this universe, because the way that Burton did it is like he did his Dark Knight Return. He created the whole world. And the first one, they had like these crazy matte painting where you believe in this city. And in return, you believe you're at Pinewood. But in the first one, it's just nuts how they make the city alive. So anyway, back to Jack Nicholson. That was a perfect casting at the time for this. It was like on the nose, one of the best laugh in Hollywood, one of the craziest men in Hollywood. And if you know the story, he got the biggest paycheck of all time for this. So.
No, paychecks are good.
Yeah, he got paid for the first three movie. He appeared in the first one.
Right.
Well, I mean, it's nothing like a good contract.
Yeah, and I think he had a rule how many hours per day he could be on set. He had to have days off for the Lakers home games and all kinds of stuff. But
the man's crazy. But they look at the work.
Yeah, they wanted him and they got him, and for whatever it's worth, most of this movie belongs to Jack Nicholson.
Agreed. And it's a great origin story, but you can't tell exactly where the rewrite for the writer's strike came in. I mean, the old Jack Napier thing came in rewrite.
Yeah.
I'm
okay with that. Like, I think it really is kind of a postmodern take on comic books. Like, I made you, you made me first. Like, I think that's great. And to set them up as that dichotomy again, I think it's a bummer that he gets killed at the end. I think it would have been really cool to go the Silence of the Lambs route, where he just gets locked up, and then when each future villain comes along, Batman kind of checks in with him and be like, so what would you do? Like, what's your plan here? What's your angle?
Yeah, they were not thinking in terms of franchise. They were thinking like, oh, if this goes true, we're lucky. Right. Now you would try to think about that, because right. just in case. And the most they thought about is that they cast Billy Dee Williams as Harvey Dent, him thinking that he would be Harvey Dent, but then they paid him to not be him for the third movie. So, which kind of sucks.
It is too bad. What do you guys? Oh, is she okay?
Yeah, she's dying again. She keeps getting a huge flu, so it's been hellish.
So, speaking of hellish, what is your take on the interpretation of Gotham City in this film?
Everything has steam pipes all the way up to the sky.
Everything has steam.
Yep.
It is wet.
There's no Roman kind of like
no. There is no Environmental Protection Agency to.
It's not even Roman. It's like it's like Nazi, kind of like these big, strong faces and like this dark. Yeah, very, it's weird.
It's very influenced by the film Metropolis.
I'm smart.
You are smart, and oddly that it's not Metropolis. It is Gotham.
Yeah, it's beautiful. This is my favorite Gotham City that they've ever built. I mean, well. This is one of my favorite movie of all time in terms of design. The suit, that giant safe for the suit is kind of...
That's cool. I mean...
Amazing.
Like I said, this thing was a ride, right? And my parents took me to Great America every year. And I can remember for most of my preteens and early teens standing in line for this thing. And you walked through a miniature Gotham City where there was a shot-up car playing a Prince song, and there was turned over like fire
dance.
Extinguisher, and then you would walk through the corral and go into like a cave and go up the steps, and finally when you came out to where the trolley was for the train, because it, you know, looked like the Batmobile and shit, there was a couple different suits inside glass cases like that, and one in the vault that you could walk past. So it was very part was formative because you were there.
Yeah. This is still my Batmobile, or I guess maybe this one combined with the one from Batman Returns. They're
very
really similar.
Flashied it up though, for the next one.
Yeah. I love this Batmobile.
And
it's the Batmobile.
And this Batmobile, and actually the animated series one, which is very influenced by it, but distinct. That to me is the design, the long stretched hood, the flares on the fenders in the back, the cockpit that slides forward. That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of the tank that it is.
No, I don't like the tank go to. The Batmobile to me, you have to have the mobile part. Like, it has to be recognizable as a car and not an armored personnel carrier. Like, it has to be a hot rod.
Yes, I agree with that. It should be a hot rod, but there's something very semi-real world and satisfying about the Tumbler or whatever. Like, after a while, they started, I think, it might not be so much in the next one, because I didn't feel the need to watch it, but maybe in the third and the fourth one, they got really weird with, like, how tall the fin got and how, I don't know, it just felt, it became too flashy.
Oh, you mean the penis car?
Where it just became like a dong, exactly.
Yes, it did.
It's because they were designed by a toy company.
Yeah, which, so then you have to have multiple different versions that kids can hold and throw around at parents.
Oh, God, that was stupid.
And I, speaking of toys, I do love the Batwing. Like, that is awesome.
From the movie Waiting?
What's that?
From the movie Waiting? The Batwing?
Yep. Yes, okay. The Batwing.
All right, just making sure.
I love that Batman takes the time to, I'm going to go in front of the moon. It's going to be badass.
I'm going to waste all my fuel and fly, you know, fly up really high, stall out, flood the engine, and go back down.
Yeah, but he built the worst plane in history. Yeah. First of all, it can't shoot. Second of all, it's one
taken
shot.
Out by a pistol. Yep.
It's so the whole plane sequence is kind always played kind of weird to me because the first part is awesome, but then they just need that plane to come down and
just needs to carry away the balloons.
The other thing about this Batman and that in both movies, since you watched the other one, he's very passive.
He is. He is not aggressive unless he's blowing people up, setting them on fire, throwing them down a church steeple. Okay, that joke played. I'll take it.
But even in the second one, when he's quote unquote patrolling in the in Gotham City, he's basically just talking the Penguin, and this and basically going into his murderous instinct. Like at this one, when he's like, "I'm going
to establish his bona fides as a crime." Preventer, a crime fighter. He's more of a one-man SWAT team.
Yeah, agreed.
In these films, like he really just reacts to whatever action set piece is happening at the moment, and uses his gadgets. This first one, there's a little bit more gadgetry that happens, which I appreciate. Like he uses the little grappling guns and the pitons and the things a little bit more, which I think is fun. We see him use the fins on his gloves with the sword fight, which you'll see repeated again in Batman Begins. So like all of it is there. I think the biggest thing is like the fake wings on his suit when they
fold out way too goofy.
Yeah. I like that later on they establish how that actually works, but it like way later it gets retconned in the Christopher Nolan movies. But
yeah, well, this Batman is just trying to have fun in a certain way. I mean, the movie is just trying to make him look badass without having to move too much.
I also,
that's a problem.
You know, for what it's worth, I know we've seen some pretty definitive takes on Commissioner Gordon, but, you know, Gary Oldman, I think, comes to mind as being a great Gordon. But I love that Gordon here is just kind of like, I'm an old guy. Like, let the bat guy handle it. Like, let's just let him deal with it. We'll just call him on the Batlight thingy.
Great. This Gordon is very relaxed. On the other end, he's a good character that helps other character develop because every time he's talking, we trust him. So when you're in the casino scene at the start, and then when you go to Access Chemical, every time he's giving you information, you just take it as, okay, that's true, and you move on. So.
Mer.
Mer.
Is the dog brown?
Is the dog brown? Is Vicky Vale a good lead actress for this?
I mean, 9-year-old crush, I'll take it.
Sure, for sure.
Yeah, she was my first crush as well.
Tall, statuesque blonde.
She screams a lot, for sure. But,
yeah, I mean, that's what a damsel in distress did.
How many of you forgot that Arliss was in this?
Who?
Robert Wool.
Who?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You totally forgot that he was in this.
I don't even know who he is.
Robert Wool, the reporter, plays Alexander Knox.
Oh, Knox. Okay.
He was the star of an HBO series called Arliss, which he played a sports agent, I believe.
Yeah, I got nothing.
Okay.
Sorry.
Sorry.
Do you remember the OnStar commercials with Alfred?
The Batmobile? Yeah.
Okay.
Do you remember the Coke commercial where he says he's going to go get takeout?
Yep.
I have it on my French VHS version of this, and I'm keeping it just for that. Just because the publicity is in English, and then the movie is one of the best dub of all time.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, that dub doesn't exist anymore except on that VHS.
Very good. Well, I think we've covered, this is a movie that obviously people have talked about quite a bit. It's relevant now. Do you guys feel that this is the first modern take on a comic book movie? I mean, I think the most recent one you could seriously compare it to is like Superman 1 and 2 before that franchise goes off the rails. And we're still about 10 years away from really the modern stuff kicking off. But when I think about X-Men, they're just dressing up in black leather. They're copying it from what Batman is doing here. So
yeah, but it's more functional black leather. I mean, let's just a bit.
Yeah, but at that point, even in the movies, they were referring to a suit as black leather. So yes, it was a direct reference at that point. The influence of Batman 1989 stopped being taken when Iron Man came in. And that is years. Spider-Man was almost in the black suit from the start because they were like, screw that yellow and red and blue thing. Let's just put him in black leather. And they're doing it this summer. So, hey.
Black leather. Yep.
It's all good.
Shall we rate this puppy?
I think we can put this one back in the Batcave.
Whoa, hey. Tell me something, my friend. You ever rated this movie in the pale moonlight?
All the time.
Wing for Batman 1989. Are you going legendary?
Batman Begins for the first time.
Legend of its time.
The Dark Knight Rises first.
Cult legend.
Mask of the Phirstasm.
Awesome.
Where does he get those wonderful toys?
Entertaining.
I am the world's first fully functioning homicidal artist.
Mabel.
This movie needs an enema.
Forgettable.
I have given a name to my pain, and it is Batman.
Night. Oh, abysmal.
Oh, abysmal. Nightmare. Nightmare.
Knightmare. I like that. Spring Breakers D&D.
Batman v Superman.
Ouch.
With a side of nostalgia, guilty pleasure, tingle, barf, tears.
With a side of Mookie, as in I'm of a mind to make some Mookie.
For me, this one is legendary. Like I said, its influence went for years after the movie came out. We're still talking about Michael Keaton being one of the best Batman, if not the best Batman. They will never go as stylish as they went during these years, and that's my favorite one of the four first movie. The Gotham, I feel that is real. I can feel the danger in this industry just by looking at them, as the other one are gonna be able to become super flashy or super studio-y, which I never like. I know people kind of love that style. I don't. So yeah, this is my favorite Batman. And on top of that, yes, this is the most formative movie of my life. This is a movie that made me, first of all, I saw it way too young, but that made me watch the TV show, that made me watch the cartoon, that made me start reading.
Nightwing nut.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because I bought a Batman book. So, you know, that's where it all starts. So for me, this movie is like with Star Wars on a very, very, very special and very
high
style. Legendary,
number one.
Jiminy Christmas.
Beef, where do you fall on Batman?
Shit. Rewatching it now, to be honest.
Oh, shit, I just dropped my Batmobile. I'm not even joking. I was just playing with my Batmobile.
Is that a euphemism?
That is a euphemism.
My Batmobile just spilled. Never mind. Ooh. If I got to be honest, watching it now, it was like nostalgic and a bit fun, but it was somewhere like, I don't know, it was so campy. It was barely entertaining. I am the world's first fully functional homicidal artist. Functioning. Mm. But, I mean...
Fully functional as well, one assumes.
Stop. But if I had to really rate it, I mean, It was a legend of its time. It did crush a lot of shit, make a lot of money. People loved it. Like Wing saying, I maybe didn't watch it a billion times like you did, but it was my first foray into superhero movies that I liked. Superman, those as a kid, I never really liked them. So I guess I got to go legend of its time. And that kind of hurts me. Lobster.
It doesn't hurt me. I will say Legend of Its Time. The Dark Knight Rises first. This is really an iconic Batman film. I think the second one is better.
Why wouldn't you say that before we watch this one, just so that we can, like, I didn't know to roll into it. Jeez.
Oh, no, no. I mean, that's totally my perspective, and that's because I saw Batman Returns first. Like, that was the one I really wanted to see, so I saw that one first, and then I think I went back and watched this one when it was playing on cable television or something. So, but I, you know, this really is the jumping off point for comic books are not for kids movies, and I think for where we end up with later in the decade, although we take some steps backwards with the Schumacher films, we ultimately get to the comic book movies are for grown-ups as much as they are for kids, and treating the characters with some artistic honesty rather than just to sell toys. And while I'm sure the Spider-Man and X-Men movies sold plenty of toys, I never felt like anything in the movie existed because a toy company said, you know, make this thing.
Spider-Ham.
Yes, exactly. but I really feel like this movie, like Tim Burton got it. And I think it's a shame that we didn't get to kind of see where that went. I know he had a third movie planned and an artistic vision for it, but who knows what that could have looked like or how crazy that could have been. I think this is definitely a legend of its time. It probably is legendary just because of the fact that it really is the first modern comic book movie, but it's still awesome no matter what.
All right, last word for Batman 89.
Love it, love it, love it. Watch it again.
Cowl. I mean, if you sleep upside down, all your blood's going to rush away from your Batwing, right?
Good point.
Only one wing makes you fly in a circle.
That's true, very true. Beef, what time is it?
Time.
Holy moly. Well, we took a week off due to the July 4th and Canada Day holidays. So we're a little behind. We are catching up on 2 weeks worth of news. We'll just talk about the box office from the past holiday weekend, where Spider-Man Far From Home hit the big time with a record Tuesday haul and brought in $185 million in its first 6 days of release. Pretty good. That's about $30 million more than the first Spider-Man Homecoming.
It was fun.
Yeah.
We will talk about it 2 weeks.
For the second Spider-Man movie, it was fine. Like
third, second, but yeah,
like,
you're right.
You know what I mean? Like, in the past 20 years, we have had three Spider-Man 2s. So,
to be honest, it was right up there in my top two.
It was right Spider-Man up there. 2s. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It was somewhere in the first or second least, Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, it was definitely my number two Spider-Man 2. Like, I will say.
What was your... see, I don't...
Spider-Man 2 is my number one Spider-Man 2.
The first Spider-Man 2?
Yes. Okay. My third Spider-Man 2 is Amazing Spider-Man 2.
See, that's probably one of my favorite... That's up with this, the third Spider-Man 2. Okay. Is the second Spider-Man 2. Oh, my God.
Yep.
Who's on two? What's on third? Yep.
But, like, just to put that in perspective, that's insane to talk about, that this is the third second film. You know, yeah.
In 20 years.
In 20 years.
And there's even a seventh one.
Yeah. Technically. I mean, we're going to keep going. But this is his fifth appearance as Spider-Man in a film.
He's looking a little old. I'm just saying. There were a couple shots where I was like, he's like 26 right now.
Give this kid a beer.
Right.
This kid a fucking beer. Like, come on.
Yeah, well, these actors age way too fast, but what can you do? You know?
Okay. Toy Story 2 stuck up there for sure yesterday still. And their Midsommar. Midsommar opened. The biggest indie studio opening of the year so far. So
this
that's
was a
pretty
creepy,
cool.
Like, cult one, right?
Yeah, like creepy Danish horror summer. Yeah, okay. Clones. Wicker Man-ish, clones. Right? Yeah. Also, I'm going to file this as a flop. Disappointing. The Avengers Endgame re-release failed to top Avatar.
Dude.
It closed the gap to 15.5 million.
They're going
to
get
it. So just wait for the re-release to...
You know what's going
to
happen. Why wouldn't they do it? They still have 4.5
months.
Drag
it across the line. Yeah, just drag it across the line.
That's what Avatar did. They re-released Avatar in September.
Yep.
And it wasn't in
gonna do
movie and theater until May, I think.
Yep, so. Four-year consideration. So...
Oh, probably, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so moving into news, there's a ton. We'll kind of rush through it.
1.5 speed.
Sandman series coming by Neil Gaiman, David S. Goyer, coming to streaming television, coming to Netflix. Is it a DC comic?
But they do good with TV shows, so I'm not too worried.
Neil Gaiman is very good with giving the rights of his creator's creation when it comes to lending them to DC Comics.
Yes.
So when it comes to these things, he can basically do whatever the hell he wants.
Okay.
Is this a good book?
It's the book.
Sandman, yeah.
They can't fuck that up. They just can't.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. The book.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Okay.
I mean, I guess you have like Watchmen, Sandman, The Dark Knight Returns, right? Like, what are your three? Yeah.
Yeah. The Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen, Sandman. Yeah. Yeah. Pretty much.
The books. All right. Jen G. Cohen is producing Slutty Teenage Bounty Hunters as a series for Netflix. Had some casting. That occurred. I just love the title. That's all. Moving on, Paul Rudd and some newcomers joined the Ghostbusters 2020 project, but not Ernie Hudson, apparently, because he's in Syracuse.
Seriously?
Yep. Did you not see the news articles I shared?
I think I just missed okay. One.
So Paul Rudd is going to be in it.
Yes.
There's Celeste O'Connor and Logan Kim are also going to be in it. Ernie Hudson was in Syracuse, New York for a Comic-Con. He did a whole big thing where he caught Slimer in City Hall, did a little press conference on the City Hall steps, and then said, oh, by the way, call me so I can be in the Ghostbusters thing.
Wow. Okay.
Yep. That's weird. The Witcher, the Netflix series, posted some preview photos to show off the characters.
Oh, that including over the shoulder look.
The white-haired Henry Cavill.
I'm excited. I'm excited.
Look at that butt. Dang.
Geralt, right? Gerhalt?
Yeah, it's a Gerhalt. I do not know.
That's what he looks like. You know, he looks like a Gerhalt. Bryan Cranston and Aaron Paul are teasing a Breaking Bad movie. This has been ongoing like for a while.
But they're teasing it now. So, okay, if this is happening, it has to be like...
It's a TV movie. That's what I've heard.
But, if Bryan Cranston's in it, it has to be like... Fever
Dexter
Dreams.
Kind of deal?
Or like Head Heisenberg?
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I'll buy it.
Aaron Paul is cracked, or Jesse is cracked as he's leaving.
He's back
the
on
thing.
The meth. He's back on the meth.
Or even as he's running for his life, because as he got at the end of the show, spoiler alert, he got out.
But we don't
just
know what
driving,
happened.
Just driving into the distance, laughing maniacally. So maybe
he
cracked.
He channels his like, what would Walter do?
Yeah, or maybe he sees Walter in the car with him, and he knows Walter's. I don't know. Maybe it's a Head Heisenberg.
Yeah, maybe Heisenberg didn't die.
No, they can't do that to me. They cannot.
Unless it's perfect. Don't fuck it up.
Yeah. I got better.
Don't fuck it up.
J.A. Bayona will direct the Lord of the Rings prequel pilot for Amazon. J.A. Bayona is a director who...
I hope so.
He has done things that you may have seen, like Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom and other big names.
Was that
name
the first one or
films.
The second one?
That was the second one. He is not Colin Trevorrow. He's also kind of made his name with monster movies. And he did the first two episodes of Penny Dreadful, the series. He kind of, to me, feels like he's coming from where Peter Jackson came from originally. So that is kind of cool to think about.
Okay.
He did a thriller called The Orphanage, where he worked with Del Toro.
I'm so not excited about that Lord of the Ring thing, I'll be honest. I'm just not.
Okay. Are you excited about a Flash movie directed by Andy Muschietti, the director of It? He's in talks to direct potentially a Flash movie. Are you excited about this?
I'm excited.
Always excited.
I don't, I liked him in Flash, or, whatever you just said, It. I liked It, so we'll see. I mean, it's like, give Ezra Miller some time to run around on screen.
Yeah,
you know?
One of the things that is so interesting to me is when they started talking about doing The Flash as a movie, they were like, but why would you do it? The Flash is in, like, season two on TV, and it's really good. And now by the time we see the movie, the Flash series will probably be done. And they'll be like, all right, yeah, Flash movie, I'll watch it.
It's a good point.
All right, the last piece of news for the week before we move to trailers. Halle Bailey of the musical group Chloe X Haley was cast as Ariel in the live-action Disney The Little Mermaid movie. If you have not clicked on the link, she is not a white actress. And this has caused certain people to lose their damn minds.
Because the greatest
because
meme.
Mermaids are real and clearly have a definitive racial characteristic.
The greatest meme I saw online was like, great, I went to bed last night and there were 39 white Disney princesses, and I wake up today and there's only 38. Like, get the fuck over it, people.
Well, no, they didn't take one away. Like, doing a remake and casting someone else doesn't...
Yeah, but who gives a shit? I mean, it's like you said, it's all make-believe. It's let them choose who they want. She's an attractive young woman who can sing, right? I'd imagine she's from a singing group.
I think that's probably, what they're going for.
Yeah, so they're
going
to want some songs belted out.
Yeah.
Why is this so fucking shocking to people? Oh my God, there's a black guy in a stormtrooper uniform? Who gives a fuck? Enjoy the movie.
Yeah,
listen to beef, people. Listen to beef.
I mean, what am I, the voice of reason?
You are right now, and right, I think you're correct in saying this. It boggles my mind, specifically because we're talking about like something that does not exist in the real world. Like,
it's like mystical beasts.
To our knowledge, mermaids are not real. Now, you can tell me that Hans Christian Andersen was Danish and he wrote The Little Mermaid as a story, and I'm like, yeah, but still, the mermaid was like green in the story, like it wasn't a real thing, like just crazy.
Just even there, the only argument that should be is like, and so,
you know, the thing I'm more disappointed about, to be honest, waiting for the red hair. That's it.
That's true.
I mean, that is legit the only thing. I was like, oh, she could probably pull off red hair. I don't give a shit. Right.
Or she doesn't have red hair.
Yeah,
like,
it's
fine.
Doesn't
have to be the
fish,
red hair.
The fish woman dyed her hair under the water. What the fuck is the difference?
Yeah. Or remember, this is also a movie with a talking crab. Like, just let
under
that.
Under the sea.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe.
They going to have the talking crab?
Yeah, they have to. Live. They're doing it with Lion King.
Yep. Okay, but I'm gonna jump to trailer dump into the end right now. Woo! Trailer dump.
Okay.
Mulan looks freaking amazing.
Mulan does look amazing. And guess what?
It has there's no Asian dragon Eddie Murphy.
Maybe there will be
a dragon. We don't know.
Okay, but look. So can I just go back to this for a second?
Yes.
Because
of course.
Maybe instead of the talking crab Sebastian being like a stereotypical Caribbean type character, maybe they'll cast a white person to be the hipster crab, like, you know, just so people can
I mean, equal opportunity, who gives a fuck? It's come on. It shouldn't be up in arms like this.
Okay, we're gonna get to Mulan in a bit. Trailer dump first off, Midway, which
can I say something?
You may.
I just saw whatever we were going to watch, the Spider-Man Far From Home. And this was one of the lead trailers.
The trailer, okay.
And they talk about Pearl Harbor being a great, you know, intelligence mishap and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like,
sure.
Oh, no, please don't be Pearl Harbor again. Please don't be Pearl. And it started looking like it, and then it looked really good. And I didn't see any, like, love triangle yet. And then I started to see love triangles. But it looks better.
Okay.
It's Midway. I don't know. It looks like it's gritty. It looks like it's
a war movie. The director of Independence Day doing a disaster movie, but a war movie.
Just the green screen might get to me, but everything looks good nowadays.
Yeah. How about Charlie's Angels? Does Charlie's Angels look good nowadays?
No.
I'm a fan of the old one, even where they're basic misogyny, but this just looks like Men in Black this year.
Well, it looks like Kingsman. It looks like let's just do Kingsman, but
it has no taste. It has no style. It has no character.
It has no flavor.
Right? In honor of this movie coming out, we should watch like the first one from the 2000s or the second one.
The McG?
McCarley.
Charlie's Angels. It's still, when I was watching this trailer, I was nostalgic for those ones because
looking for Lucy Liu's.
Yeah, and Cameron Diaz and
Drew Barrymore.
Thank you.
Yep.
Instead of,
I don't know.
There's a Stewart or a Kristen, maybe someone.
Twilight.
Maybe. Yes, that's the only one that I kind of knew. I didn't even see the other names.
You knew the Pink Power Ranger / Princess Jasmine.
Okay.
And then the other girl.
Okay.
The Pink Power Ranger is going to have a career.
She is, yeah. She's going
to
stick this.
You know, two fellas who I think might actually have a career. It's Hobbs and Shaw. These young fellas.
Hobbs and
Shaw.
That's
the future of Fast and Furious now that Vin Diesel's a bitch.
This is the only movie remaining this summer that I'm excited for. This is the mashup of two movies last summer that were the only two movies left I was excited for, Skyscraper and The Meg. Yep. Combine them. Every trailer looks better and better.
This one looks phenomenal.
It looks so stupid. It looks great.
I know. Well, this was the last trailer, again, right before Spider-Man. So I was like, oh, my God, I haven't watched the full one yet. So I'm excited now.
It looks very, 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 very fun.
Well, they dropped the tagline. It's all about family, bro. Yep. So... you know, it's a Fast and Furious movie.
I know you're on a rock high because we did Skyscraper. We're talking about Hobbs and Shaw. Let's keep that going. Let's, in fact, take it to the next level.
Oh, God.
Welcome to Jumanji.
I like that they changed the dynamic. I like that the players aren't the same people, which I think will make this for a super entertaining movie.
Yeah.
The only one that looked the same was Karen Gillan, right?
Yeah, Karen Gillan's character is the same.
But everybody else is different. That's so great.
Yep.
That's a good idea, actually, because they can't keep the same star, but they can play something different every time.
What's great kind of is to take the most absurd character, because her character is so... like, her Karen Gillan's video game character is written to be so, like, one-dimensional.
Right.
But to have her be, like, the voice of reason, and everyone else is, like, played by Danny DeVito.
Right. It's going to be so good.
Great. I was super excited to see this trailer. I'm very excited to go back to Jumanji.
If it's half as good as the first one was, because I didn't expect the first one to be that fun at all.
We talked about the first one. I'm like blanking. We talked about that on this podcast.
No, because I've never seen that.
Oh, my God. Double feature Wing.
Yeah, we need to.
Yeah,
we need Wing, to put you'd the
have,
first.
You'd have fun with it. It's dumb and fun, and it's not. It is probably American humor too much for you. But guess what? You're going to do it anyways.
You got why I didn't go there. It's
you
not
still
that
like
I was
it.
Not like.
You'll still like it because it's all about video games. It's not about. It's not.
Yeah, it really is. It's about absurd video game
extra
mechanics.
Extra lives. And, yeah, it's exactly video game mechanics.
Yep. Knives Out from Rian Johnson.
Yes.
This looks
give
cool.
Give it to me. Give it to me.
Like a whodunit murder mystery?
Yeah. Very much a Murder on the Orient Express with, I mean, everyone who I love. Like,
I'm very ready for this. Very ready.
The cast is astonishing. The trailer looks absurd. Totally in. Definitely,
when
if you
this?
Haven't seen the trailer, watch the trailer. They played this for us before Spider-Man, and it was my first time watching it. I knew the trailer was out. I just hadn't watched it yet. And I was like, oh, they're actually showing this? What?
Yeah, it looks cool. Better. I saw the first 5-10 seconds of the trailer. I'm like, what is this? And then I was like, whoa, okay, I'm in.
All right, last but not least, Disney, Mulan.
God, it looks good. And it's actually, like, well-casted with the right people.
Yes.
And it has the style of a
Crouching Tiger. Dragon, yeah.
It's beautiful. I hope they keep going that way, because that's...
Yeah, I think if they lean less Disney and more let's make a, like... an action epic. I think that would be really, really cool. I will add one other thing that the first thing I thought of, honestly, which was, and if you're a Rick and Morty fan, you'll kind of be on board with me here, is will they bring back Szechuan sauce to McDonald's? Like, will this be the thing that they're like, okay, we did our test run with the Rick and Morty fans. It was a big hit. We brought out Szechuan sauce the first time for Mulan. We got to bring it back.
What if they only come out? What if the only people that come to get it are the Rick and Morty fans?
I don't know. Like, you could just introduce it to a whole new generation. So interestingly enough, they did not know what. No one had a recipe for it. So
what?
they had to reinvent it. So it's not really clear to anyone if it tastes the same as the original. But
how do you not have a recipe for it?
Just wasn't how they did stuff. They did not have a recipe for it, and they had to kind of recreate it from scratch.
So they only made one batch of 7,000 gallons of Szechuan sauce. Okay. It seems a little weird, bro.
But I'm perhaps more excited for the possibility of that than the actual Mulan movie, but the Mulan movie looks good. Like, it does look very good. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely going to be fun. Definitely. So, fellas.
Okay, so that is the end of our Batman retrospective, 30 years, which is kind of cool. Also, 30 years?
Yeah,
now, old. How many Batmen have we had in that time, too?
Probably
five Batmen?
How many movies, too? You got to think about it. That's almost as many as Spider-Man, except 20 years.
Yeah. It's 9.
Spider-Man.
If you count Suicide Squad, it would be 10. But
yes.
I don't count Suicide Squad. It's
no.
Cameo. So.
Okay. All right. Next time, Legends Podcast. Lobster is going to be gallivanting, so we are going to do I Am Mother on Netflix. I believe Taco's joining us, Wing?
Yes.
Excellent. This has been episode 429 of Legends Podcast. I'm Beef saying, I'm Batman.
I'm John D saying, I'm Batman.
And I'm John Lobster saying, I am your mother.
Nerds.
That's what we are.
Yeah, that's why I like you guys. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to leave us feedback, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Legends Podcast. For all our contact information, as well as other shows, look to GunnaGeek.com and KrakenCast.com. You can also visit legendspodcast.libsyn.com, where you'll find our complete archives. The music heard on this podcast is Danger Storm by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incomputech.com. The opinions heard on this podcast are those of each individual host and do not represent Legend Stream Canada, Gunna Geek, or Kraken Cast. No infringement is intended.